afternoon.
Hey, how are you?
Welcome to... There we go. Welcome to sound in my ears. Welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And our sponsor this hour...
is Team Power. Team Power's our local
John Deere. Tell us a little about Team Power, Bill.
They're a local John Deere Kubota tractor dealership up there on Twin View Boulevard, just south of Phil's Propeller. And they're everything tractors up there. You need a tractor, an implement. You need something worked on. They can do it up there at Team Power. They're at 3119 Twin View, and their phone number is 226-9226. Give them a call or catch them on the web at readingtractors.com. They're the experts.
There you have it.
There you are.
All righty.
Oh, you know what? Before we go too much further, too, I just want to call out that we have a special...
Because you don't like shout-out.
I'm not going to
You're going to actually just change
that.
The word, use the same expression?
Yeah, I'm not going to use that term. But we have a very special sponsor up in the...
Ooh, good call.
Up north of us here that sent us... a rather large, what would you call it?
Donation toward the...
Toward the radio show,
toward the program.
And I want to thank that person very, very much. They want to remain anonymous, but thank you very much for the
donation.
Yeah,
but her name's Karen.
Yeah, her name's
Karen. Okay, we'll leave it at that.
Karen.
There's a lot of people named Karen between here and the Canadian border.
Oh,
it could be anyone.
True. That's true. But,
except for the three of us in this room.
Yeah.
Couldn't be us.
Yeah. Thank you, Karen, very much.
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
Especially since... you know, our funds have been rerouted. It's like a conspiracy.
Yeah,
the washing machine can't get it fixed. Sears, rather than send me a part, is...
I'm going to send you a brand new washing machine, because that's easier.
Because they can't figure out how to send me a part. Bizarre.
Yeah, very bizarre.
And then the washing machine secretly was talking to the air conditioner while we were gone, and got home Friday night when it's, 106 or whatever, and the air conditioning doesn't work.
Yeah. So when you don't have any other alternative form of cooling your home down, your other option is to move out until they fix it.
And that's away.
That's what we had to do the last couple of days. So, yeah, it's been a challenge. But, hey, if anybody does want to sponsor the show, how do they do that?
Let's see. You can go to wethepeopleradio.us, click on the sponsor tab. That gives you some information. And actually, I've set it up so that people could, kick in $10 if they want. They can put in a little bit every month. You've got a lot of options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got folks that every month send us a check, just automatic check, and that's great. We really appreciate
Lynn,
that.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, Lynn.
And it just takes, the bite out of it, because we do, we have to pay for the airtime, because, obviously we could say almost anything, and we have to be held totally responsible for that. That
that's
costs
right.
money.
That's right. And it's very risky to have us on the air.
I can't possibly relate the entire disclaimer, because it's too long.
That's right. But we are the responsible parties.
But it does amuse us every time we hear it.
Yeah.
And it makes us feel like we might be doing something bad.
Which is good.
Yeah, which is awesome. So today we have Dr. Harry Booyans with us again. And so for those of you that are like, are they talking about South Africa again? I got to tell you, nobody's complaining. Every time we talk about South Africa, the listenership just...
skyrockets.
Oh, yeah, blows up. So this is a huge topic of interest, and I don't remember which program it was, but he was telling us some things about President Obama while he was in office, and what that looked like from the perspective of people who either live in or come from South Africa and have affiliation there. So anyway, he had told us all this stuff. Tuesday night, I'm driving home from Siskiyou County, and I'm listening on the satellite to Obama speaking in South Africa. And I thought, oh my gosh, he's saying all the same stuff. Get home, open the email. The email says, told you so.
Yeah, Harry was listening.
I was like, I think he heard the speech too. So we thought we would do that today, and I did pick out a few fun songs that we didn't play while he was president, but we could play now that he's not president. So in case we ever re-air this, it's July of 2018, because I know we've re-aired shows from 2016 and 2018, and people were all pissed we were capping on the president. But it was really during a different term. So anyway... at the point we're recording this, Donald Trump is the president. Oh, all the liberals' heads just exploded.
Yeah, you said it. You said the word.
And Obama's out of office. Yay, all the conservatives are cheering. So we're kind of one-sided. Yeah. We're not fair and balanced here. And we don't care.
No.
Actually.
No.
There's enough fair and balance in the world.
I don't want to.
Yeah, you know what? I don't want to either. And you know what? We were really hot yesterday and sweaty. Yes. So you know what? Today we can do whatever we want.
And you know what? It's only supposed to be 109 this coming week.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. You know, we have to enjoy the cooler weather today. I don't know if it's going to hit 100.
Sure, it's probably hotter in South Africa and we're complaining.
That's
so we'll
true.
Stop now.
Yeah, okay.
Although we do only live 2 miles from the sun.
Never mind.
We called this show The Real South Africa. Obama is fanning the flames of white genocide, which should give you an idea of what you're going to listen to. So if you don't like that, you should probably change the channel. But I think you're going to like it, and it'll be interesting. So Harry Buyans is an internationally recognized, I'm going to read the little bio that he hates. He's a multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist. So he's not just anybody. He's originally from South Africa with a 360-degree bloodline in that country, and he currently lives with his family outside Vancouver, Canada. And he's a scientist, so he's all big on facts. So this isn't all just opinion and, you know, talking head stuff. He actually has done all the research, and he comes from there. So without further ado, we have him on either phone or Skype or something. We have him on phone, so we hope he can hear us.
How's it? Indeed, I can hear you, Aaron.
Nice. No one says they can't hear me.
And Skype, which decided to collapse the moment you called me. I don't know why that is. I think my system is allergic to you, possibly.
Oh, I think our air conditioner and washing machine were talking to your computer.
I hear the distinct sound of Skype reviving itself in the background.
Oh, yeah, I hear the little water sounds. Well, maybe maybe before we get too far down the road, we'll get it.
Take a shot at Skype again. We can try and make it work.
Yeah, maybe at the next break we'll give it another round.
Nice.
And see if we can do that.
And you know, before I forget, I wanted to tell people the email that I was referencing you sent me. I put it on the website. So if somebody wants to read that, we're not going to read it to you. But if you would like to read that, and I'm going to attach some other information that he also sent me. Some we may discuss, and some we may run out of time. But that is all on there for you to read. So where would you like to start? We got a couple minutes before the first break, but you can kind of give them a flavor of where we're going to go.
Well, I'm struggling a little bit to hear on the phone, Aaron. It's incredibly soft. But
terribly sorry.
I think you asked me where do we want to go. Well, you told me to maybe address the matter of President Obama to some degree.
Yes, please.
And I jotted some notes down here, and my comment to you would be, you cannot understand the phenomenon called Barack Obama II unless you understand Nelson Mandela, something about South Africa, and something about Kenya. Because all of that goes into the mix, and the problem is that you had a president who was physically born in Hawaii. I accept that. He was formed as a human being in Hawaii and in Indonesia, and I intend to prove to you in Africa. So if he was physically born in Hawaii, he was essentially psychologically born in Kenya. I don't contest his birth certificate in the least. But to understand why I make those comments, at the risk of sounding like an idiot when I make them, you're going to have to understand the formative background behind him, and that takes you to a little village called Kohelu in Kenya and to South Africa at the end of the 1970s, because that's where he recorded, that's where his inspiration came from. He said so. It's not me, it's his words. And to understand that, you're going to have to know just a little bit of history. And unfortunately, most Americans know pretty much zero about history in Africa. So I was hoping you guys would bear with me this morning if I sketched some of that, because a lot of this will make no sense without it.
All right. Before we start that, let's take a quick break so we don't have to jam you up. And we'll try Skype while we're we're celebrating capitalism here for just a couple of minutes. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. No, play our song. It's not playing. No, that was a fun song. There it is.
just all gather round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, said, "Leave this one alone." She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you're bad, all right.
That's what they were singing in Hawaii.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
All right, we're back. And Harry, can you hear us?
Okay, you're back on the air.
There we go.
There we are. Yeah, you're coming in loud and clear.
Either had drum beats or sounds of a struggle. I wasn't sure which. We were worried about you there for a second.
Yeah, I think you had a bit of George Thorogood back there.
Yeah, we did. Couldn't get started on this topic without playing Bad to the Bone. Seemed appropriate.
Okay. So I don't know how much you could hear of what I said earlier.
Oh, we got it all.
Oh, yeah, it was loud. Yeah.
Okay. So let's see. Maybe I should just go through. It's like a little litany of 9 points, which I would call the drop-dead important historical facts about South Africa. And I'm probably going to hammer these because folks don't know them. And the points are that when the Dutch settled the Cape of Good Hope in 1652, the nearest black people were 700 miles away. Secondly, it took 2 generations until 1702 before white people met black overland for the first time, about 600 miles east of Cape Town. It took 5 generations before people clashed the first time, around about the same area. The next important point is no indigenous black South African person was ever enslaved by any white man from anywhere. Not by the Portuguese, not by anybody. The next point is that it's actually the white South Africans, not the black South Africans, whose ancestors were slaves of the Dutch. And I'm a good example. I have a West African slave ancestor, and I'm supposed to be a lily white guy. The indigenous Cape population were the Khoi and the San people. They are not black people of Africa. They are the Khoi and the San, okay? Historically known as the Hottentot and the Bushmen. Since 1814, the white people in South Africa have had no right of return to Europe, unlike the colonial Portuguese, British, or French. So today's young Afrikaner, it's his great-great-great-great-grandfather was the last man with any right to a life elsewhere. Now, I don't want to keep harping on the South African history. That's pretty much all we need to know for today's discussion. The point is, my ancestors have been in South Africa, my European ancestors have been there since 1652, or at least my own precise ones since 1657. They came 5 years after the initial guys. Now, that's rather different from the fact that in the late 1800s, the British went and colonized East Africa. Okay, that's more than 200 years later. So what you need to understand is that there was a thing called the Berlin Conference in the early 1880s, I think it was. And at the Berlin Conference, a whole bunch of guys, the United States was actually invited, did not attend. But the European powers got together around a table in a smoke-filled room, and under the leadership of the well-known Bismarck, they decided how they were going to partition Africa. And each of those countries then had the right to go in there and take the piece of the so-called cake that they wanted, and with it, the people who lived there. It was as a result of that effort that Britain went into East Africa and colonized places like Kenya and Uganda. And the Germans got Tanzania, which is just south of it. Back then it was called German East Africa, Deutsch Ostafrika, later called Tanganyika, and today called Tanzania. It is immediately south of Kenya along the coast. And I wonder if you could bear with me while I just shut the phone down because it's disconnected.
Oh, sure.
Okay, there we go. All the buttons are pressed. So the picture that you need to have is, at the southern tip of Africa, this collection of people who are remarkably like the Americans, their closest cousins, and I've dwelt on that repeatedly, so we can go back there even when you want. But for all practical purposes, your closest cousins on Earth, at the southern tip of Africa, never having had anything to do with direct African slavery, we left that to other people, like the British. We left it to all those who wish to wash their hands in public these days. And life went on, and it was more than 200, it's more like 240 years later, Europe made a beeline for Africa. The Germans took German East Africa and German West Africa, respectively Tanzania and Namibia. They also had a country in the Bight of Benin. In other words, there where the Africa's coastline bends from north-south to east-west. So they had, I think, Togo is where what they took, if I remember correctly. The Italians were in the north around Libya and places like that, and in northern Ethiopia. The French were all over the heart of Africa. The Belgians took the Congo, which is where the book The Heart of Darkness comes from. And so you need to have a picture where along the east coast of Africa, there's Ethiopia, and below it is Somalia, and then Kenya, and then Tanzania. That Kenya was now British by the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century. Kenya was British, and below it, Tanzania was German. And far in the south, at the southern tip of Africa, was South Africa, now populated with your closest cousins who had been there since the 1650s. Nothing to do with attempts to colonize Africa or anything like that. Now, in the 1800s, our guys in South Africa fought two wars against British colonialism at exactly this period when the Brits decided that they are going to help partition up Africa. They tried to take the old Boer farmer republics, those ranching republics, and amazingly, they got beaten in the first one. So the guys got their independence back, but Britain didn't like that idea at all, so they started a second one in 1899. So here are your cousins at the southern tip of Africa fighting colonialist imperial Britain in order to retain independence, at first winning and then in the second round losing. Way up further north in Africa, in Kenya, there was nothing much like that. They sat there. They were now occupied by the British. Now, history moves forward, and in the 20th century, the earliest Obama we know of was born in Kenya, in the vicinity of Lake Victoria. And so was the second one, whose name was Barack Obama the First. So he was born on the shores of Lake Victoria, and in a village called, he was baptized in a village called Kogelo, or Kogelo, depending on whose pronunciation you want. And that's where the connection comes in, because this gentleman, this would be the second Obama that we trace, or otherwise known as the first Barack Obama, he applied for a scholarship, and he was helped. I just want to make sure that I get all the names nicely and correct here. He was helped by the man who would later be the Minister of Justice of Kenya, namely Tom Mboya. Now, the kind of stuff I'm talking about here is a subject that retired Brits would know about. They would more likely be conservative, and their sons are probably screaming liberals trying to make up for what they thought daddy got wrong. You know the story about why the
the father, the son argues against the father, but the father was a son once, so he argued against the grandfather. And so the world goes through these cycles, right? Where the grandson does, but the grandfather did. Okay. So now, at this point, I've now done synoptic South African history. Let me go to the synoptic Kenyan one. Kenya was occupied by the Brits in the late 19th century. They slowly tamed the highland area, which was a good agricultural country. And in fact, some South Africans went and settled there. In fact, some Boyan's family members went to Kenya and settled there as farmers. The Brits were inviting people to settle there. And it is there that Teddy Roosevelt found some of my wife's ancestors. They had gone there to settle and farm, and he was quite complimentary about them and said that they make excellent settlers, they know what they're doing with farming, they have many kids, and all that kind of stuff. So your president went there to hunt, and he met these guys of mine and my wife's, and in fact, he sang them a little tune that he knew from, from his mother's knee, so to speak. And I read he wrote it in his book, so I read that to my own mother. So this is me, Harry, speaking. I read those words to my mother, and she recognized the tune. Because Roosevelt said that the South African families up in Kenya actually recognized that. So life carried on. And then after the Second World War, with Europe now having beaten itself up, Churchill was very instrumental in making sure that that Germany got beaten to a pulp. In the process, Britain managed to get itself beaten to a pulp, and America had to save everybody from themselves. So you called it the Marshall Plan. Everybody forgets that Britain was also a benefactor of the Marshall Plan. When that kind of stuff happened, it was pretty obvious to colonized people all over the world that if ever there was a time to strike back, this was it. And that is why you saw all these independence things happening in Vietnam, with all that entailed in the end, India, the splitting up of the place into India and Pakistan, the Egyptians under Nasser, who said he's going to nationalize the Suez Canal, which Britain had controlled for a century, and the same happened all over Africa. Now, this independence or freedom movement in Africa got traction in the 1950s and came to fulfillment in the 1960s in most of so-called Black Africa. So call that Africa south of the Sahara, if you wish. South of the Sahara and north of the Zambezi. The Zambezi River is the northern limit of what used to be Rhodesia and is now Zimbabwe. So in the 1950s, Britain went through a process. I'm not sure how to describe it. I think it's called sticking your tail between your leg, running like hell, but trying to keep the quorum and wear a fluffy hat in the process.
Is that a hyphenated thing? hold on for 1 second. We've got to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. Our guest is Harry Boyens. He is a resident of South Africa for many, many years, and give us some good insight today. We'll be right back. We are back with our guest, Harry Booyans, and I'm posting your blog post right now, actually. I wasn't able to do it earlier. The connection I had at the hotel was so darn slow, I couldn't even get the page to come up. I couldn't get our own web page to come up.
Could I ask which one that is, Aaron?
The blog post that you sent me?
Yeah.
A white African and a black American.
Oh, the latest one.
Yeah, okay. The one today. You emailed it to me, but I couldn't get it online because I couldn't get there from here.
Yeah, that was rather an experience for me.
Why is that?
Well, I think at one point in that post I say that within a stretch of 1 hour, I and my own white folks back in South Africa were prayed for by a black church minister, American black church minister. Then I went on stage, delivered a talk of the same ilk as what I'm doing at the moment. It would have got me tarred and feathered or worse in the U.S. just 5 years ago. And then I walked off the stage and I was approached by my original sworn enemy who came to offer support.
Wow. Turn around for you.
Go make sense of that.
Okay, so, yeah, coming off the stage, I met Sonny Pazikas, who is a very impressive Russian gentleman. With a history in the military, works in security, as he describes it. And he told me, Harry, you did exactly the right thing to show these folks what these actual farm murders truly look like. Yeah. Because some of the folks who saw the talk were clearly extremely upset. And I'd worried about that because I would have told everybody, make sure the kids don't see this. Make sure the ladies don't see this. This is not the stuff one normally sees in life. But folks don't believe us as to what's happening. You know, what can you do? All I told them was what I'd already told you guys on the radio, which is just go to Google Images, to Google Images and just put in the word farm murder or farm attacks. And see what you get. If that doesn't rattle you to your core, I don't know what will.
Yeah, because it is stunning. And for the people
horrific.
Who maybe haven't heard the earlier shows, I did post those. We started with the history of the Dutch on May 27th of 2018. Then we talked about the farm attacks specifically on June 3rd, 2018. And then we kind of talked about the politics of the attempt at this point to basically exterminate whites in South Africa, and we did that on June 10th of 2018. So those links are there, and the links to Google Images and all that. So if you're, you know, don't have a pen in hand and you want to figure that out, go to wethepeopleradio.us, go on, you know, today's show, which is July 22nd, and you'll find all those links there, and you can get the rest of the backstory. Because we can't, you know, obviously every time we do a show, we can't redo all the other shows, just run out of time.
Yeah.
So we were on the story on the occupation, I guess, of South Africa and Kenya, and I was going to ask you the reason everybody was sectioning up Africa was to exploit the natural resources. Is that right?
That was the basic idea. You see. Old King Leopold of Belgium had really been, he was the original. He was the guy who said, man, I want myself a piece of Africa. And then he got to, I can't remember exactly who were all the guys who went and did the exploration. But he essentially got himself the colony of what is today Zaire or the Congo. With all that followed from that. And then when everybody saw that, okay, so here's the king of Belgium, of all places, and he's cutting himself a big swath of Africa, the rest decided, hell no, we got to have a piece as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so imagine Europe sitting in a smoky room deciding how they're going to partition up North America. And then they rush in, and some of them attack via, the coast of Georgia. Other ones hit the New York coast. Other ones come in via the Caribbean. And yet other ones attack via California. And they march on land. They plant flags. And they announce that they own the place. And the whole damn place is just sectioned up like that, right? And then doesn't matter who's living where. They just put a fence up and they say, okay, well, you guys over there and your closest cousins over here are on the other side. One lot is now our subjects, the other lot are your subjects. Doesn't matter. Okay, welcome. You are now occupied. You are a colony. Please mm-hmm. see us. Okay? And that's basically what happened. And that is why it's one of the reasons why there's so much trouble in Africa. Is go and take a look at how many straight lines there are. You can thank the Brits for that.
Yeah, there aren't any.
Those borders, you know, it's just it's unbelievable, the temerity of it. But anyway, or I don't know whether it's temerity or audacity, probably both. But so by the 1950s and early 60s, the Brits were in abject full retreat. It was something of a strategic rout. I don't think there's another word for it. They ran. And they ran with their tails between their legs. They couldn't maintain the so-called colonies of theirs. They wanted out. A handful of years before, they begged people to emigrate there and go settle there. And within 3 or 4 years, they had turned 180 degrees in the wind. And they were telling them, sorry, we've just sold you to these indigenous guys who have been attacking you. So lots of British immigrants had ruined their lives in Britain to move to Kenya, only to be told, actually, guys, go back.
Right. But they had the option at that point to go back to England. I mean, they were still able to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is the point I've been trying so hard to
right.
make people, is that even Portugal, who had been the original colonizer of Africa, I mean, they took little patches of Mozambique, which is south of Tanzania, north of South Africa, south of Tanzania. And they took Angola, which is north of Namibia. They took little patches along the coast and then traded with the black people along that coast for slaves. That's where they got their slaves, Mozambique and Angola mostly. In fact, the way I understand it, most black people in the Americas, North and South, are probably descended from the Ovambundu tribe in southern Angola. And the Ovambundu actually enter history in a fascinating way later in what is known as the Battle for Africa. I got to pick the story back up where the Brits are getting out of Africa as fast as their legs can carry them while they pretend to have a stiff upper lip. And a plume on the head. These governor generals of theirs always had these funny hats with these plumes and things.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this reverse gunboat diplomacy. You know, they historically their gunboat diplomacy was to ride sail a boat up a river and shoot up a couple of people. Now they were sailing the boat up the river to collect their governor general so they can get him out of there as fast as they could. And so the Brits left, but it was a mess. In Kenya in particular, during the 1950s, there was an uprising, and it was called the Mau Mau Uprising. Now, I could quote you from many, many, many British sources what that was like, but I thought it would be much better to quote a black Kenyan author, because I wouldn't trust the Brits on that score, and so I don't think anybody else would. So let's hear what a Kenyan author, Bethwel Allan Ugot, said. The Mau Mau fighters, contrary to African customs and values, assaulted old people, women and children. The horrors they practiced included the following: decapitation, general mutilation of civilians, torture before murder, bodies bound up in sacks and dropped in wells, burning the victims alive, gouging out of eyes, splitting open of the bodies of pregnant women. This is a Kenyan black author who wrote this. Okay?
So you can kind of count on it. I mean, it happened.
It happened. This is the point I'm trying to make. Right. If you read the British, they're less dramatic in their statements, but we know the Brits know how to underplay everything. So the Brits actually locked up, incarcerated, found guilty, prosecuted Jomo Kenyatta as being the supposed leader of that effort. Now, Jomo Kenyatta would later become the president of Kenya.
He was the leader of the Mau Mau uprising.
They claimed he was the leader.
Okay. We've got to take one more quick break, but we definitely want to pick it up right here.
Okay.
At what happened at that point.
So we always get distracted.
I know it.
and we are talking about Obama in the next... next segment. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
To my records all day, with big ambitions of when I could play. My parents taught me what life was about, so I grew up the type they warned me about.
And there Obama. You go. And there Obama. You go. That's the intro for Barack Obama.
That one I missed. So,
you guys
are cutting the sound off. I can't hear the music.
Oh,
I want to hear the music too.
That's wrecking it. Darn it! I'll have to send it to you because that's a good one.
So we were at the arrest of the Mau Mau leader by the British,
yes.
Or supposed
yes.
Mau Mau
Way
leader.
Way to keep focus, Bill.
Yeah, we want to stay on the story.
And here we go. Here's the point. Obama's grandfather was imprisoned by the British for ties to the Mau Mau insurrection in Kenya. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when Obama went to Kenya, which I think the first time was in the 1990s as a younger guy, he found all that documentation. And you can, there's some excellent YouTube video of him talking to a huge Kenyan audience and telling about them about his experience as he went through his grandfather's paperwork. Okay? And he found all the stuff. So his grandfather was imprisoned by the Brits for ties to the Mau Mau.
Now, the Mau Mau were socialists?
Yeah, focus, Harry, focus. Let me put it this way. The isms of the white man don't count for much in Africa. They have their own isms.
Right.
And there is a thing that people will call African socialism. And it's based on the idea that the chief is the guy that holds sway over property, and he will dole it out to the tribal members. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite the same thing as state nationalization the way that the Russians ran communism or the Chinese. But people equate the things, but they're not really the same because the African-ism contains other things as well, like animism. And it showed during... It comes out pretty quickly. You know, very recently, one of the South African parliamentarians yelled that this Christian stuff has nothing to do with them. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's from people who are supposedly converted Christians. So you need to understand that Africa has its own isms, and some of them seem to have a partial overlap with communism. It's probably better to just call it African socialism or tribal socialism. Historically, you can go pretty much anywhere in the world. There's not too much the history of private property ownership is a relatively short one. Let me put it that way. Very much associated with the West. So that was the first thing. Now, the other point I would like to make, and I'll tie them together, is that Barack Hussein Obama II, in other words, the man who became the president, he's a real African-American in that he is descended from an actual African father and an American mother. Other black Americans are just that, namely Americans who just so happen to be black. And I've said before, if people have a problem with them on that score, I would call those people racist.
But they can surely trace their roots back to Africa.
They can trace their roots back to Africa, but how many black Americans do you know that would be able to tell you that they descended from an Igbo guy or from a Hausa guy, or that they know for a fact that their ancestor who arrived in America was Bantu or Nilotic or wherever? They usually can't do that.
No.
And that's because they associate culturally 100% completely with America.
Yeah. Their ancestors came from Detroit.
Yeah, my grandpa was from Detroit. You know, big deal. Hey. They don't think in terms of where they come from in Africa. They don't know. And it's like Oprah, who thought that she was descended from a Zulu. Okay? People were very quick to point out to her that the Zulu were never enslaved.
Oops,
exactly. You know, so you get people who want to BS on the score. And but I'm talking about real, ordinary, decent black Americans. They have little, if any, idea of their own tribal origins. But Barack Obama knows his father was a Luo tribesman from the shores of Lake Victoria. That's where he was born.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Luo are a Nilotic people, Nile people. Sounds funny if you say Nilotic. They are the people of the Nile. They are not the same anthropological grouping as the people further south in Africa. They presumably did mix with them, etc., but they are the same people as those who live in South Sudan, in parts of Ethiopia, and in parts of Uganda. The largest number of them live in Kenya. In Kenya, they're the third largest grouping. Okay? And the language they speak is called Doluo, but I mean, that's just like a prefix. You know, it's the Do is just a prefix, Doluo. So there's no doubt as to the ancestry of ex-President Barack Obama. His father was a Luo guy from Kenya. Okay, that's like the same way in which Jacob Zuma will tell you that as president of South Africa, he's descended from a Zulu guy who lived in Zululand. There's no confusion there. Okay, but that's completely different from any black American I've ever met. So, now, his father, Barack Obama's father, Barack Obama I, his stint in the United States from 1959 until some distance into the 60s was sponsored by the African American Students Foundation. That thing had offices on Park Avenue, New York, and also in Nairobi, Kenya. So that's how he got apparently he got to America on his own steam, but they then sponsored him from there. As far as I can tell, around about late 1961, the following individuals were on the board of directors of that organization. Julius Nyerere, the future communist president of Tanzania. Kenneth Kaunda, the future president of Zambia. And Tom Mboya, Kenyan African activist and later Minister of Justice of Kenya. Those are some family connections there.
Yeah, that's a power base there.
That's the power base. Okay? Now, that's it with the Africa connection, except to say that folks really ought to get onto YouTube and just put in there Obama Kenya and start listening to ex-President Obama. I guess I shouldn't say ex. Listen to President Obama when he visits Kenya. Listen to him speak. What you are hearing is the voice of a man who is explaining how his family went through the British colonial period, what happened to them. That's his calibration. Then he takes that and he immediately reflects it onto my own original South Africa, which was never part of that.
Yeah, that's totally unrelated.
Totally unrelated, okay? But nevertheless, I guess he can do that if he so pleases. It's just that he makes wrong conclusions and then people die.
Oh, that's all.
You know, I hate to do this. We have to take a break. But that is the crux of the issue, is his connection with, and I think a lot of people in America don't, I don't know, identify Africa as these separate, totally separate histories of different countries in Africa. They tend to group it all together and say,
"Yeah, Africa is like one big place, like the United States."
You're from Africa.
Guys,
you're...
1 month ago, a superb gentleman at a dinner table in Spokane, Washington, leaned over to me, wonderful gentleman, and he said, "Harry, are there countries in Africa?"
There you go.
Whoops.
Yeah. There you go. And I think that's a pretty popular thought that we all know that there's different countries, but they're all the same.
But I don't think people think, like, when they think of Libya, they think of Libya as being, like, floating in the ocean alone.
Yeah.
They don't realize it's part of the continent. And it's funny because whenever you speak, I always have a map of Africa in front of me, just so that when you reference all these places, I can see how close they are, because I forget.
Guys, like, you know, here's the equivalent. I really want to tell you how angry the United States makes me because of how you are running Venezuela.
You know? Yes.
That's the equivalent.
Okay.
And when we come back, we're definitely getting into, now that we're at the point where we can talk about Obama's speech down there last Tuesday and what that means for us and what he's talking about. We'll be right back with our guest, Harry Bouillons. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.